We will now consider the late question, which was circulated on white paper. Councillor Anoud-El-Samri, do you wish to ask a supplemental question?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Yes, I do. Thank you very much to the Leader for his answer. And I think we're all delighted about pay to stay being dropped. I was slightly concerned that his answer gets Southwark Labour councillors taking all credit for dropping pay to stay and just refers to others as "and others." I think that's really quite offensive to people like Tanya of the Housing Acts, the Housing Act campaign, the Defend Council Housing people, cross-party colleagues in the Lords, and I just think it would be nice for him to actually recognise who some of those others were this evening.
Can we have a question?
Yeah, my question, in his answer, he refers to a letter which was sent in September 2016, which I understand maybe there were good intentions in that letter, but actually it had the effect of scaring a lot of tenants who had a joint household income of over 40 grand. I just wonder, in hindsight, whether there are any lessons to be learnt about the timing of that and whether in future he might wait until government guidelines have been produced before something that really does terrify people.
Councillor John.
I want to thank Councillor El-Samri for her supplemental question. I mean, I do recognise that this was a widespread campaign of people right across our borough and others. I don't know how much the government listened to Tanya, but you know, if they did and Gavin Barwell was moved by that her campaign, then that's good. But I think it was the broad coalition actually that had the impact in this case. I hear what she says about the letter in September. Actually, the reality is that campaigners were asking us to tell tenants far earlier than September about what the implications of the Housing Act were going to be. And actually, we thought September was a proper time, given that we were anticipating that the regulations and guidelines were going to be issued in October, for us to set out to tenants right across the borough what we thought practical implications were going to be on them. And in fact, during the in response to that letter, and indeed before, we all had, as councillors, picked up numerous examples of cases where individuals and families were going to be severely impacted by the Housing Act, by the pay-to-stay provisions within them, and how it worked as a great disincentive, actually, to them getting on in life. So I think it was the right time. I hear what she says. I think you're kind of damned if you do and damned if you don't, but I think it was the right thing for the Deputy Leader to set out what the implications of this Act were going to be, to set out what the Council's position was in respect of this Act, and to warn people to be prepared for what the Government were doing. And I hope, maybe in some small way, the fact that more and more tenants became aware of the implications and did react with horror to what they saw, that again also played a part in forcing the Government to U-turn on this issue.
Councillor El-Samri, do you have a second supplemental question?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. As the answer also points out, there is more to be done. There's a meeting on the Canada Estate on the 8th of December, and I just wondered whether he would commit to attending that.
I can't attend that meeting on the 8th of December, but I think it's a shame that that meeting is taking place and the advertising that's been put forward for that, because I think it's entirely misleading. Misleading for a number of reasons. There are no plans to demolish council homes on the Canada Estate which would not have the support of local residents. In fact, the only proposal for any demolition of a council home came from Barry Duckett, the chair of the Canada Estate TNRA himself. He was the one who advocated proposals to demolish Edmonton Court so we could build more housing there. And it does seem rather ironic that now he is the one who's leading the charge against it. I think Barry's forgotten what he said and what he suggested to the council in times gone past. Of course, we can step away from that and we can say we will only build on those sites where we as a council have support to build new council housing. But, you know, and I've said this before in this chamber, it really is beholden upon us all to support and to help fashion where we deliver new council homes across this borough. We're told time and time and time again, including by the opposition, that we have to build more homes, more genuinely affordable homes, and there is no home which is more affordable than a council home. And I would really think it would be a very retrograde step if the opposition started playing politics about our plans to deliver new council housing, because there are sites where we can deliver new council housing, where we need to deliver new council housing, and it's important that we get on and do that. And so Defend Council Housing's campaign and that meeting on the 8th of December, completely misguided in my view, completely misguided for any politician in this chamber to support or give support to it, because I think it is completely misleading. And I think it works against the interests of the residents of this borough. At the end of the day, we do need more housing, more affordable housing, more council housing. That is what this council is determined and will deliver. We will not do it, and we cannot do it, against the will of tenants and residents in this borough. That is why people need to get behind us right across the political spectrum and not play politics with such an important issue.
Thank you. We shall now consider members' questions. We have only 30 minutes for questions, so members should ensure their supplemental questions are genuine questions and not speeches. Councillor Jane Lyons, do you have a supplemental?
Yes, thank you very much. Leader, thank you so much for your answer to my question about the shifting powers, it seems, of community councils. And indeed, it is a very long and detailed answer, which seems to be targeted at additional community engagement, though, as I think is well evidenced and well known, our community engagement levels in Dulwich are already substantial, and suggests that there'll be different ways of taking into account, for example, some of the traffic consultations, informal, included in this comment here, though, as the author or collator of 103 informal responses on one set of double yellow lines that was dutifully ignored. My original question was about budget savings that apparently are the key driver for this, and that although there are a lot of budget numbers in this answer, I don't believe the budget savings question has been answered, so I'd like to reiterate that question, please. Thank you.
I want to thank Councillor Lyons for her supplemental question. I don't have those figures. I'm sorry, I don't have those figures now, but I will undertake to provide them to her. But I do want to make this general point. Dulwich Community Council, if it wants to carry on meeting in very formal session with all the councillors sitting at the front on a table, can carry on doing that. This is what we are doing. We are freeing up community councils to run meetings in the way in which they think is most appropriate for their area. I think a lot of residents find it pretty much of a turn-off to turn up at a meeting and see a string of councillors sitting at the front of the room and meetings run in such a formal way. I think that this gives members the opportunity to take control of the meetings that are run in their areas, to really dictate what goes on the agenda, how you run the meetings, how the interactions take place. And I would have thought that all members would welcome that liberation from constitutional guidelines to get on and do things. And if you want to discuss particular planning or parking or whatever proposals in that setting, then please feel free to do so, obviously within the limits of the decision-making powers that are bestowed upon you by Council Assembly. But I think this should be a welcome move. I think community council meetings should constantly look to innovate, to be more interactive with members of the public. And I do hope that Dulwich councillors, and particularly yourself and Councillor Mitchell, do take advantage of the freedoms that this gives you for truly meaningful engagement. And I'll come back to you on the figures.
Councillor Octavia Lamb.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I'd like to thank the Leader for his answer to my question on employment figures. A heartening response indeed, which shows a 12% increase from 2010 and a higher employment rate than London and national rates. I do have a supplementary question. Can the Leader explain how many new jobs have been created in Southwark as a result of investment in housing and regeneration?
Well, I want to thank Councillor Lamb for her supplemental question. I think the figures, in a way, speak for themselves. 78.4% of our population aged between 16 and 64 in work in our borough at this time, which is tremendous, and a 12% increase over the six-year period compared to a 1% increase over the preceding 6 years. So this is good news for Southwark. And I think we have to be able to say that many of those people in work are in work as a consequence of the housing and investment and regeneration that's going on right across our borough. In terms of the direct impact of Section 106 agreements, though, for instance, on the number of people in work. There are 908 people who are in work in Southwark as a consequence of Section 106 agreements negotiated by this council, bringing jobs, homes and opportunities to our borough.
Councillor Morris, do you have a supplemental?
I do, Madam Mayor, thank you. I must say I'm heartened by the Leader's response to my question. It's not the answer that I had anticipated. So I'm going to push a little further on that open door and say, is there any possibility that the Council could commit to putting something like that in place for the new council homes that are being built to ensure that any that are subsequently sold through right to buy are kept as primary residences and not used for Airbnb or as second homes or anything else subsequent to their right to buy sale. Thank you.
I want to thank Councillor Morris for her supplementary question. I think that's a very interesting idea, and I will ask officers to look in to see what we can do in terms of covenants that might be put in leases in respect of properties. Obviously, we hope that the new council homes that we build are not subject, well, are not lost to right to buy as soon as all that. I was looking at some stats earlier this week as I went along to the CLG Select Committee yesterday and gave evidence on house building and how planning and house building was going on across Southwark and across London. And there is such an obvious problem in the system at the moment, and it's existed for 30 years, and it's actually governments of all colours that have not put this right. If you go back to 1969, fact lovers, 175,000 homes in 1969-70 were built by local authorities. That was one half of all new homes that were built in that year, 350,000 new homes. That dropped, and it carried on, over 100,000 new homes being delivered by councils until, guess when? 1979. And for some reason, in 1979, the figures began to fall off a cliff until only 28,000 were built in 1981. Last year, the number of council homes that were built in this country, 1,490, of course, of which we're delivering some of them, which I'm very pleased to say. But throughout that period, the private sector has carried on building at pretty much about the same rate. Housing Association numbers have gone up a bit. They peaked at 40,000 in 1991. Last year, less than 30,000. Unless and until a government of whatever colour gets it into its head that actually we're only going to solve this housing crisis by freeing up local authorities to be the commissioners and builders of new homes and use public money in a way that delivers the new homes that we need, we're never going to solve this housing crisis. And I love the idea of community land trusts, but that's not going to solve the housing crisis, 23 homes here or there. We need to become volume builders again as a country. We need to see house building as infrastructure, which needs to be built alongside all other forms of infrastructure, and the government needs to invest in it in the same way. And there are things that we can do that should not offend this government in terms of public-private partnership to make new homes be built. And also, I think we've got to move away from this idea of only homes for sale is the answer. I think, particularly in this part of the world, that private rental, and we can include discounts within that, is the answer, and we can deliver the homes that we need in our borough. It's really time this debate moved on and that we woke up to the obvious problem that it's only when local authorities were building that we were building the housing that we needed. That is why I'm so proud of what we're doing as a council in our very small way, but it is a small way, and we need to encourage this government and any future government to really get behind investment in the only housing that actually delivers, that's local authority housing.
Councillor Mitchell, do you have a supplemental?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. No, I don't.
Councillor Fleming, do you have a supplemental?
I do, and I thank the Leader for his pithy yet comprehensive response to my question. If I can ask that, councils, the national health charities and care providers have all been clear about the desperate need for government to take action to tackle the funding crisis in adult social care. Does the Leader agree with me that it is utterly unacceptable that the Chancellor of the Exchequer has failed to address this issue in the autumn statement?
I want to thank Councillor Fleming for his supplemental question. I absolutely do think it was quite wrong of the Chancellor not to talk about adult social care, it is absolutely the biggest crisis facing local government at this present time. We know the strain that we are under locally. We hear of councils right across London, right across the country, under pressure. It's not just us who are saying it as well. Lord Gary Porter, the Tory chair of the Local Government Association, said that it was unacceptable that the Chancellor had not addressed the issue of adult social care funding in the autumn statements. Services supporting our elderly and vulnerable are at breaking point now. If Tory local government politicians are saying that, you know, I think we're on surely in a part of the argument where we can all surely agree. It's absolutely wrong, I think, for the government to carry on trying to take more and more money out of adult social care. And it's no good, as the answer will undoubtedly be, for the Prime Minister or Secretary of State to say, well, of course we've given them the power to raise a 2% precept. We've lost something like 50 million, I suppose, out of what we would spend on adult social care since 2010. The precept, 1.7 million. It is just not replacing the money that we are losing year in, year out. You know, we have an increasing ageing population, a health service which is a breaking point. You know, the thing that had been preventing that breakage within the NHS, I think, had been adult social care. But we're going to break the NHS. Maybe it's what the government wants to do. Maybe it does want to break the NHS by starving us of funds and putting such great pressure on our health service. I hope that they're not so cynical as that, but I do hope the government wakes up to this crisis that is not just facing Labour councils, but Tory councils. Are there Lib Dem councils? Yes, there are some Lib Dem councils across the country at this time. So I would urge everyone from every party to make the case for increased funding for our adult social care services.
Councillor Johnson, do you have a supplemental?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I do have a supplemental. I'd like to thank the leader for his answer. There are innovative new community-led homes, which I hugely support, by Leathermarket, CBS in my ward, and I want to take this opportunity to thank the leader for his personal interest in this site, which has helped us to get some movement after a very, very long delay. My question is that these new homes cost £370,000 to build, well above the average in his answer of £279,000. I don't know if he's able to give us an explanation for why these new homes are so expensive and what he's doing to ensure value for money on this really important flagship innovative site.
I want to thank Councillor. I don't know the answer. I don't know those figures, so I'll look into that and try and put my mind at rest as to why that figure is so great. Whether there's anything to do with the land value factored in there, I do not know. I think it is important, though, to recognise that the homes that we are building and delivering are of genuinely the highest quality. And I don't think any of us would want to see us value engineering homes that are not fit for purpose, that are not going to last, you know, beyond next week, and things will need to be repainted and doors need to be rehung. You know, this is we want properly built homes, which will be lifetime homes for people. I will look into the point that he has raised. I'm slightly alarmed that it is so much above the average figure, but I'll come back to him on that as well. So I've got Councillor Lyons and yourself to come back on with answers, so please remind me. But thank you for your supplemental.
Councillor City, do you have a supplemental?
Yes, I do. Thank you, Madam Mayor. I thank the leader for his response to my question, and particularly in reaffirming the council's commitment to supporting refugees within the borough. The leader would note that when refugees are settled within the borough, that one of the major difficulties they also have is integrating within the environment indeed. And that's why it's particularly important that both language and advocacy support is key to any support in terms of resettlement. Would the leader commit to speaking to the government to ensuring that language and advocacy support is key to any resettlement package which is agreed with local authority?
I want to thank Councillor Situ for his supplementary question. Yes, absolutely. Although, actually, I do have to say that our teams who work with refugee families, one of the first things they do is to ensure that, you know, English as second language courses are available for them and that they're taken to them. And it's one of the things I'm proud of that we do very well. Our adult and community learning service across the borough, which is rated good by Ofsted, continues to provide a great service. And one of the key constituents for that is people who are new to our country, and particularly refugee families. So we'll carry on making the case to government to properly fund it, but it's something that we're doing, and I think we do well in our borough.
Councillor Al-Samarin, do you have a supplemental?
Thanks very much, Madam Mayor, and thank you to the Leader for his answer. At the Overview and Scrutiny Committee, we heard from a number of Aylesbury leaseholders who were genuinely very anxious that they would not be able to afford to live in the area which was home for them as part of the Council's regeneration process, and I don't think any of us would think that was a good thing. The Cabinet Member at the time assured us that he would go and meet and talk to all these individual leaseholders. As the Leader knows, I have emailed the Cabinet Member 5 times over the last 6 weeks. I was told he was on leave. I don't think he's been on leave for 6 weeks, or at least I hope he hasn't. Would the Leader commit to personally meeting with these leaseholders instead, please?
I will happily meet with leaseholders, but I'm sure that it's in Council. Yes, he's doing it. I'm sure he's going to do it. But I'll happily meet with leaseholders and explain the position to them. Of course, listen to them, and I understand their concerns. And all I can say,
time.
Yeah, let me finish my answer, if I might, Madam Mayor. All, but if you don't, okay. Well, if people, no. If I might just say this, you know, that there are guidelines beyond which the Council cannot go in terms of money which we offer to leaseholders. Now, unless the government wants to turn around and say those guidelines are wrong and you can pay or should pay 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, whatever times more in terms of compensation to be rehoused, then we are bound by what the government has previously said. We're also bound to ensure that we're not spending council money in a way which is unwise, and we ensure that we do get value for money. One of the questions from Councillor Ben Johnson was about value for money. So there are limits on what we can spend, but we will talk, we will listen to what leaseholders have
Thank
to say.
You very much,
I do
Councilor
think it's regrettable, though, that the government is holding up 800 new homes because of, I think, a very flawed decision by the Secretary of State on the CPO.
Thank you. Time for the questions to the Leader has ended a long time ago. We shall now consider questions from community councils. So, Councillor Sunil Chopra, Cabinet Member for Business and Employment and Culture from Peckham and Nunhead Community Council.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. It will be nice to know what difference is the apprentice standard making in terms of improving the quality of apprenticeship for those involved. Thank you.
I would like to thank Councillor Chopra for his supplemental. If memory serves me right, Peckham and Nunhead Community Council meeting was a very lively discussion, that particular meeting, and there was a lot of good ideas from the floor in terms of that particular subject of apprenticeships. You know, we have, as the Council Assembly will know, we have an ambitious target of creating over 2,000 apprenticeships leading up to 2018. And we're making good progress on that. But we know as an administration, it's not just about numbers, it's also about the quality of apprenticeships as well. And this is very much what the reasoning behind the apprenticeship standard. First commitment is the London Living Wage. A member of the local economy team recently spoke about the reasoning behind him getting into his first apprenticeship was the guarantee of earning a decent wage to be able to live on. This is compared to the minimum wage for the apprenticeships more generally at almost £3.40, which is significantly lower than the London Living Wage. There's also a commitment around mentoring and training. This is our commitment as a council to be able to say we would work with employers so that no apprentice is left in the lurch in terms of their experience on the apprenticeship, and also that year's commitment as well. So there's very much commitment from employers to say they will take on apprentices for a year. There have been significant differences in terms of people that have gone through the apprenticeship standard and their ability to continue through onto having a career in their particular field. Quite simply, the apprenticeship standard is our commitment to be able to say, we'll support you if you want to take on an apprenticeship, and an apprenticeship leads on to a career. Thank you.
Councillor Kieran Williams to the Cabinet Member for Regeneration and New Homes from Camberwell and Walworth Community Council.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Thank you very much for your answer. I want to go back to what we discussed in the theme debate earlier and ask for Camberwell Station to reopen. Clearly it needs the support of the Secretary of State and of Network Rail. And I wanted to hear your view on how likely you think that support is to be forthcoming and what more we as a council and a community across Southwark can do to secure that.
Thank you very much for your question, Councillor Councillor Williams. And also this came up at Camberwell Community Council just last week. So as I mentioned earlier during the theme debate, we had a really good site visit with both Mike Brown, who's the TfL Commissioner, and with Leon Daniels, who's the Head of Surface Transport at Transport for London. And Transport for London support us and fully support us getting the station reopened. And we're currently working up a business case jointly with Transport for London to make the case both in transport terms and economic terms and in regeneration terms that this should be opened. And we're working with colleagues just over the border in Lambeth as well. Network Rail, it would be fair to say, are a bit more lukewarm, and the leader had a meeting over the summer with Network Rail that didn't go as well as we were hoping. So what we need to do is, once we've got that business case with Transport for London finished and finalised, is for us to make that case jointly with the Mayor. And I discussed this issue with Val Shawcross, our former Assembly Member and new Deputy Mayor for Transport, last week. And she's fully supporting us and fully supporting getting Camberwell Station reopened. Make that case to Government, make that case to Network Rail. Also as part of the consultation on the Thames Link services we heard about earlier this evening, making sure there is capacity and scope within those new rail timetables for the services to stop at Camberwell Station, so when we get the station open, the trains will actually service it. And if we don't get a good response from Network Rail and from the Government, I think we've all got to come together across Camberwell, get our community, get our two hospitals, our two major hospitals that the station would service, to lobby the Government and say, look, this is really needed in transport terms, in economic terms and in regeneration terms. So the time will come and we'll need to gear up the Camberwell Society, the SE5 Forum. They've been successful in the Leisure Centre, they've been successful on other campaigns. I'm sure we can get Jenny Agata and the great and good of Camberwell out to support our campaign to get Camberwell Station reopened, and look forward to working with all members cross-party on this.
Councillor John Hartley, to the Leader of the Council from Dulwich Community Council. Do you have a supplement?
Thank you, Madam Mayor, and my thanks to the Leader for this very helpful answer and indeed the strong support shown by the Council in the previous debate on this issue. Today is actually the 80th anniversary of the burning down of Crystal Palace, something which is still strong in the folk memory of people in the southern part of our borough. And it was a tragedy, of course, of its own, but it also led to the slow and inevitable decline of the Crystal Palace High Line station, and serves as a timely reminder of the fact that it's a long, long time that South London has had a second class public transport service in comparison to other parts of London. Many Dulwich councillors, along with local MP Helen Hayes, are campaigning to try and ensure that we get a stronger response to Southern Rail on their latest set of timetable changes. Can the Leader also commit to continuing to work with us and with the local MP to keep the pressure up on this issue?
I want to thank Councillor Hartley for his supplemental question. Yes, absolutely. I want to congratulate Helen Hayes for the work that she has done. I mean, it's the primary case here is for this line to come under the control of the Mayor of London and TfL, and we continue to make that case. I was fortunate enough to attend a meeting with the Mayor and the Chancellor of the Exchequer just before the autumn statement, where the Mayor reiterated the case for Southern Rail to become part of TfL. I'm not hopeful it's going to happen anytime soon. I'm not sure that the Government and the Transport Secretary particularly get it, but I think somebody has to wake up again in Government at some stage to recognise that this line and this service is not serving the people it should be, and that actually, in the way that we have seen the transformation of travel with the overground, that it's time now for other services to come within the purview of TFL, and we'll carry on making that case together with Helen in Parliament and with other colleagues as a council. It's a top priority.
Councillor Kerslake.
I've got a short supplemental. I'd like to thank the Cabinet Member for coming to Community Council, talking about general transport issues and also listening to the deputation from Harper Road. Thank you for his continuing work with residents of Harper Road and for his response. The question also talks about complaints from residents on John Ruskin Street and Webber Street, and I wonder if there's any update on that. I know that he met with officers and residents of John Ruskin Street. I'm grateful for that. And also, if I may, does he think that in general this work signals a slightly better and more productive relationship with TfL on some of these kind of incidental issues we're having with the Elephant Castle?
Thank you. I'd like to thank the member for the supplemental question. Yeah, what I'd like to say is that I think if you look at question 10 from Councillor Noakes and the reply there, it sort of overlaps to a certain extent. I referred to earlier about Lancaster Street, and I went there with Councillor Noakes and some of the local residents, and we saw some of the traffic problems, which again are the fallout from dispersal of traffic around the Elephant Castle since the improvements were made there. I'm afraid TfL, you know, do have their head in the sand a bit still. We had a meeting with Councillor Eastham and local residents from Harper Road on Monday evening, and unfortunately, although TfL initially said they would come, they then said no, they wouldn't come, on the basis it was a borough road and it was the council's responsibility and not their responsibility. However, as I'm sure we can all agree, the fallout from the Elephant is as a consequence of their actions, not our actions, however worthwhile they may be, because there was no plan in relation to the dispersal of traffic from the Elephant. So they're running it up and down John Ruskin Street, as you say, and we met the residents there the other month, as you know, to discuss that. Harper Road, we've got the knock-on effect from Borough Road along Lancaster Street and Webber Road, as you indicate. So we're in the process of collating more data, more information. We're trying to get TfL on board to also collect information that will hopefully then prove that there is a case for them to get involved with and also to help provide solutions with. And I'm hoping that early in the new year we will be able to produce something in all of these areas which will meet the concerns of local residents.
Okay, now we move to questions to the Member for Business, Employment and Culture. Councillor Shimmel, have you got a supplemental?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I do, yes. So I would like to thank the Cabinet Member for his answer. Just in supplementary, I'd just like to ask what response has been received from the local business communities to the offers of the new units that he sets out in his answer in both the Elephant and Castle and in Peckham, particularly as to whether or not they'll provide enough new units for all of the local businesses that want to relocate. And if he can just assure me that consultation and conversation with the business owners will continue as those regeneration projects continue. Thank you.
Yes, I would like to thank Councillor Shimmel for her supplemental. In terms of, fortunate enough to be a Peckham ward councillor as well, and in terms of the businesses along Peckham, they're very much, and the creation of Peckham Palms, they're very much eager to essentially get involved, and they're very much being taken along in the process, as well as investment across and on the Old Kent Road as well, businesses we're engaging with as well. And we also have the Southwark Business Forum and the Biz Forum as well, which is an ongoing conversation we're having with businesses right across the borough. Thank you.
Councillor Caldwell, do you have a supplemental?
Thank you, Madam Mayor, and I'd like to thank the Cabinet Member for his detailed response to my question and also for attending the recent Borough, Bankside and Walworth Community Council meeting earlier this month. Beyond the business forum, which you mentioned in your response, could you talk a bit about the other organisations the council has engaged with in order to promote the London Living Wage?
I'd like to thank Councillor James Cowell and congratulate him on his first speech. In terms of organisations we've engaged with, we have put together as Council Assembly will know, in March we had a living wage symposium which brought together not just employers, but it brought together employees. It brought together the cabinet member at the time, Councillor Ian Wilfield. It was hosted by one of our local MPs, Helen Hayes, which brought together a wealth of experience in terms of tackling some of the challenges around the living wage. And some of the discussion and key recommendations that came forward from that was around our role to lobby national government, and we've continued to play that role and will work with our MPs to continue to play that role as well. The discussion also talked about engaging with dialogue with local employees and local residents as well, and we'll continue to do that. And from the fallout from the Living Wage Symposium, we've had a Living Wage report again, which has been circulated widely and was able to touch on at both community councils last week. And finally, it's the role of ourselves as councillors as well. We recently had a living wage briefing for councillors, and I was pleased to see both members from the Labour side and the Liberal Democrats wait out for the Conservatives. But it was really good to have that discussion, and I'll encourage as many councillors to have discussions with their local community groups, local businesses, to really promote the living wage in their local community. Thank you.
Councillor Soames, do you have a supplemental?
Yes, I do, Madam Mayor. I'd like to thank our Cabinet Member for his comprehensive response to my question. I'd just like him to, please, if he could, update us on any future plans for investment in our town centres, please. Thank you.
I'll thank Councillor Soames for her question. As the response says, we have a great tradition over the last years of investing in our local town centres, and carrying forward, we'll continue to do that. So in October 2016, we opened round 5 of the High Street Challenge, and that closed in November 2016 for applications, and an announcement on successful local businesses and projects will be imminent on that. But also looking forward to 2017 as well, in February, early 2017, January, February, we'll be launching round 6 as well. And again, at every stage of this High Street Challenge is very much our commitment to work with local businesses as they put forward ideas to support their local town centre. But as well as that is the wider effort to work with BIDs and business improvement districts, both from the blue to Better Bankside, and supporting them as they attract more people to their local town centres.
Question time has now ended. We shall move on to the next item.